Scott, looking at this from a 30,000-foot kind of overview, how would you assess the Trump team's transition to this point?
It's more rapid. It's more efficient than it was 8 years ago. I mean, he came in with a shock and awe campaign of naming potential designees for his cabinet, some of whom are polarizing, some of whom are especially controversial, but because he did them in synchronicity with each other, he's kind of diluted the scrutiny each one can get. You put forward Tulsi Gabbard, whose former House colleagues have accused of echoing Putin talking points to lead intelligence. You put forward Pete Hegseth, who has very limited management experience to run the most complex bureaucracy in America. And you put forward Kash Patel, who's accused of being a devoted Trump loyalist to run what is supposed to be the independent FBI. And you narrow the target for Trump's opposition because they're all coming forward at the same time. It's either a master class in pushing through controversial nominees, or it's about to blow up in his face when the confirmation hearings begin in a couple of weeks.
Let's talk about that a little bit more in depth, because many of those picks for the cabinet have been on Capitol Hill recently, trying to shore up some support ahead of those confirmation hearings. What's the latest on those meetings, and has anybody made any real significant headway ahead of those confirmation hearings?
I think it's too early to tell, even though there have been several days of meetings for each of these nominees, and that also includes RFK Jr., who's been accused of being an anti-vaxxer to lead the nation's health programs. So far, those nominees have met largely with Trump acolytes in the U.S. Senate, his most devoted supporters in the Republican conference. There wasn't expected to be much of a dissenting voice there. But the test will be how they navigate the Democrats, with whom they're going to meet and with whom they'll have to speak at the nomination hearings, and the more moderate Republicans who have a history of defying Donald Trump in the past, including Susan Collins of Maine, including Lisa Murkowski of Alaska. And I'm watching the newly elected senator from Utah, John Curtis, who is succeeding Mitt Romney. How do they handle those meetings? What's more, Democrats have held their fire on these nominees so far. They are expected, almost certain, to unload any number of criticisms and political ammunition when the hearings begin. So far, they've kept their powder dry. Let's see what happens to these nominees when that stage begins.
I am also curious, too, with so much institutional knowledge that is now gone from Capitol Hill, both in the House and the Senate. We've heard audio recently from North Carolina Congressman Patrick McHenry, who is not returning to Congress. How much of that institutional knowledge that has gone on Capitol Hill is going to hurt both chambers when this new Congress is sworn in?
An awful lot is lost when you lose institutional memory. I mean, you have to develop real policy expertise to function as a legislator. You have to know how these laws are going to impact people, which means you need years of experience in policy writing, policy making. That's a problem. North Carolina clearly is losing some of its institutional memory, but also its seniority in Congress by having so much turnover, not just Mr. McHenry, but of course all the Democrats who kind of got written out of their districts, at least one of whom is now shifting to the State House. This is a problem for the state in particular because they have lost seniority. They lost a chairmanship of the powerful House Financial Services Committee with Mr. McHenry's retirement. And that's something the state will have to regrow from scratch starting in January.
I want to ask about the Trump campaign or the president-elect's campaign and his immigration policy. Seems like there's being maybe a little bit of a rift within some of the MAGA base about this immigration policy, particularly the H-1B visas.
Oh, and that comes just the worst possible time for Trump because it's coming at a time when talk radio is looking for something to spend its midday hours and it's blistering hot takes on. You have Vivek Ramaswamy now with a social media post that seems to criticize the values of other Republicans and Trump allies about international workers being more desirous of businesses than U.S. workers. I don't know where that goes politically. But I do know where this goes policy-wise. Trump has been unequivocal, and his new border czar has said in so many words, they plan detention centers for families. They plan to have private contractors track down immigrant children. They plan on forcing some immigrant parents to decide whether to leave their U.S. citizen children behind in the U.S. or bring them with them if they're deported. That all begins in early January, according to Donald Trump. And some of this, Congress can try to slow or stop. Some of it is in Trump's hands alone.
Scott, as I let you go, I'd like your perspective from a Washington standpoint on what's going on in South Korea, where that company or that country is now impeached its acting president. This comes just, what, weeks after they impeached the first president.
That is destabilizing in a part of the world where South Korea has been a critical part of U.S. foreign policy and geopolitical influence. It's hard to say where that goes because not only has there been a move against the current power, but it's not clear who's going to fill the gap. This is an economically vital area for the U.S. This is a politically vital and a security vital area for the U.S. This is a pressing concern as the new year begins, and this is about to fall in Donald Trump's lap January 20th.
CBS News correspondent Scott McFarland. Scott, always appreciate the time and the perspective. Happy New Year to you. Look forward to visiting again soon.
Same to you, Chris.
Thanks so much.